All right, so Founding Fathers Friday, and we've talked about a lot of them thus far as we get you ready for the 250th celebration of this grand experiment that is the United States of America. And our second president, John Adams, you know, there was a great docuseries. It was a great reenactment. And I can't remember who did it. It was on HBO. And it highlighted the life of John Adams and the relationship that he had with Thomas Jefferson.
Okay.
By the way, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson died on the same day. It was July 4th. It was 50 years after the signing of the Declaration of Independence. I think three of the first five presidents have died on July 4th.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Different years, but same day.
John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, I believe, died on the same day.
In the same year?
On July 4th, yes. On the same day.
Wow.
50 years after, to the day, 50 years after the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And I think it was Madison. I don't remember. Regardless, John Adams was a consequential figure. Why? Because even go back to before the Revolution, before the presidency, there was a lot of information about Adams and the kind of man he was. So let's talk about him with Dr. Kurt Graham, the president of the Adams Presidential Center. Doc, good morning. It's great to have you.
Hey, thanks so much. Great to be with you. I heard your traffic report on the way in, and I thought it was the Boston report. All the construction and closure stuff sounded very familiar. I thought I was on a local station.
Right. Well, thanks for hopping on with us this morning. I want to go back to what happened at the Boston Massacre, because John Adams defended these British soldiers who opened fire on these civilians who were pelting them with snowballs and rocks and oysters, things like that. And they opened fire. They killed five citizens. But John Adams thought that they were getting a bad rap. He defended them and ultimately won. What did that say about his character?
Well, it says a lot of things about his character. It also says a lot of things about the conditions in the colonies at the time. I mean, Adams believed then, as he believed even later in the Revolution and into the early Republic, that the rule of law was paramount, that everyone needed and deserved a fair trial. Everyone needed to be represented. And so he's, you know, he's on the side of the crown, and this is in 1770, you know, not necessarily a popular place to be in Boston at that time, but he said, you know, whatever it cost me personally. And by the way, he was one of the best lawyers in Boston. He had a thriving practice. So he had a lot to worry about, not just in terms of, you know, people throwing rocks through his windows or getting tarred and feathered or whatever could happen with mobs, but he stood to lose some business. But rather than that, he actually gained in reputation and in prowess because he did the right thing for the right reason. Now, this is 1770. You have to remember that no one is talking about independence, about breaking away from the crown. They're just saying, hey, there's some issues here we need to work through. You know, there's some things that we don't approve of and we don't like having soldiers in our city. You know, you talk about several thousand soldiers in a city that only had 15,000 residents at the time. So it felt very much like a police state to a lot of colonists. So Adams, you know, he says, hey, you know, look, we still need to defend these people. We need to do the right thing. He later reflected on this. He said it was the most manly thing he ever did to defend those soldiers because he felt it needed to be done. Kurt, it was definitely a bold move.
Kurt, John and Abigail Adams opposed slavery. John Quincy Adams spent much of his later life, fighting it. Why do you believe their story has particular relevance today?
Well, you know, when you think about the founding fathers, the first five presidents, for example, John Adams is the only one who did not hold slaves. Now, it would be wrong to equate Adams with a, you know, post-civil rights thinking American. I mean, he was not Martin Luther King. He was not necessarily advocating for that kind of equality at that time. But he was way ahead of a lot of his particularly Southern contemporaries. He knew that slavery was wrong, but he wasn't necessarily willing to throw down the gauntlet and in the way that John Quincy later did. That's that's an evolution across a generation, not just within a family, but within a country. But no, the fact that John and Abigail Adams did not own slaves, I think is very unique to today because it points to an alternative path, that it's not a foregone conclusion that America was born as a slave-holding society, there were other people and other options and other opportunities. Those didn't necessarily win out in the 1780s and 90s, but ultimately through the work of John Quincy Adams, you know, Abraham Lincoln, others, and then, you know, we have the Jim Crow, and we're still wrestling with race relations in this country. But, you know, we owe it to people like John Adams that we made it as far as we did, certainly in that early time.
Yeah.
He met King George III. What was that meeting like?
Well, a little nerve-wracking for John Adams.
He's yeah.
The emissary. He's the ambassador to the court of St. James in London, and he goes to meet the king. And, of course, now this is after the Revolution. This is much later. This is in 1785. And he's a little... he's the first American, certainly of his stature, to go and have an audience with the king. And he's thinking, well, you know, I was one of the responsible parties for breaking up the empire and taking away the colonies that George felt very badly about and very much lamented and regretted. And you know, John Adams and Abigail, unlike, you know, Jefferson and, you know, even Franklin to some degree, I mean, Franklin was, you know, came up through the ranks in a way that Jefferson was born into the ranks. Mm-hmm. But Adams, you know, as a farmer, he came up through as well. And so, you know, being in the court, being around royalty and nobility, it wasn't necessarily their comfortable go-to place. I mean, they were New England farmers. And so there was a little bit of social angst about it as well for Abigail and for John both. But for him, it was, you know, at least he wrote whether he thought that day or not. That was a little scary.
The courage it took to enter that chamber is something else. Dr. Kirk,
what do you say to a guy like George? Hey, George, how's it going?
How are things? Dr. Kirk Graham, we appreciate your time and insight into our second president. Thank you for your time this morning.
Great to be with you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. Fascinating stories.
Man.
Yeah,
it really
fascinating stories. 7 o'clock hours next.